COG, which stands for Child of God, based on a David Sedaris essay, actually, in Naked, the book Naked, the collection Naked. And the movie's been made now. The man who made it is Kyle Patrick Alvarez, joining us now, and it's a big hit recently at Sundance, and he's going to talk about the movie and so forth. And let's find out what he's going to talk about. If I put him on here, we can find out. Hi, Kyle. How are you this morning?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. So what was that Sundance thing like? Was that pretty exciting or what?
It's, you know, it was my first time there, and I took my first film to a lot of film festivals, but nothing kind of compares to the sort of level of intensity and scrutiny and excitement of a festival like that. I don't think I was quite prepared for it, but it was pretty incredible.
It was well received?
Yeah, it went really well. You know, I mean, it's a film. Whenever you make a dark comedy, you know, there's always going to be something divisive about it, and that's what I liked about it. That's what I like about David's work, even. So you're never going to make everyone happy, but certainly the critics that I respect and the people that, you know, and the audience response was phenomenal to it.
You know, I think I'm probably the only person who's ever made everyone happy.
Yeah.
So not everyone can do that, I realize.
It's a difficult skill.
It's tough, and it doesn't last for long. And David Sedaris, was he there with you?
He was. So he saw the film for the first time at the premiere.
He gave his blessing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we did a little bit of press afterwards, and he talked really positively about it. You know, I think it's sort of it's got to be a bizarre experience, even independent of being a notable writer, just to see some version of yourself on screen or some representation of what you did. So I would imagine it would take some time to really settle in. I certainly don't think if someone made a movie about me, I don't know why they would, but if they did, I don't think I'd ever be able to see it. So I certainly I respect him a lot for being there and supporting it and supporting me.
How did you land him? Wasn't that a tough sell? Because he's written about his life entirely, but it would still be hard to make a movie, I think, about it.
Yeah,
for him.
He's notorious, you know, to say no. In fact, it was a policy at a certain point from his team. You know, back about 10 years ago, a much bigger budget film almost happened at a studio, and, you know, with a big cast and all of that. And he wrote about it in an article, I believe it was for Esquire, I'm not certain, wrote about it, about his experience. And he said this great thing. He said he ended up deciding against doing the film, not because he was worried they would get him and his family wrong. He was worried they'd get him right. And I thought it was such an interesting perspective. And so he was very protective of his family. And for me, I've always wanted this story, COG. I didn't like go through all of David's work and say, which one would be the best movie? I had read this story, you know, I mean, my goodness, probably like 15 years ago or so, and always loved it, and it always stuck with me, and its themes always stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And so I sought out this specific story, and I think that was the vital difference, you know, that I wasn't really trying to take his life or his family and put that up on screen. I was really trying to tell a specific story, and I think that appealed to him. And he liked my first film, too.
Yeah, that was the one about phone sex?
Yes.
What do you like about it? <Never mind. laughs> But that also was based on an essay, too, right? I mean, you got a thing. And wasn't that guy on This American Life, too?
Yes, he was. And they're both named David. So I think I've got a very specific market of the film industry cornered. So,
yes.
That was a Davy Rothbart essay.
Right.
He's also contributed to This American Life. And so when I started trying to pursue David Sedaris, people were, you know, rightfully so, you know, his representation and everyone and sort of my representation. They were all like, no, he doesn't say yes to these things, and it's not really worth your time. And I basically didn't rest. It kind of always stayed with me. And so I went to a book signing of his and gave him a copy of my film. And of course, I had the fortunate advantage of my first film being based on Davy Rothbart's work, so he was somewhat familiar with it. And then he watched it, you know, a few months later after his tour, and liked it. And so we started engaging in a dialogue of what my intentions would be.
Okay. Now, and this essay, it's not, I keep on saying it's a story, but actually it's an essay because it's real, right? Basically,
yes.
All happened. It was a story of a bus ride from North Carolina to Oregon, where the protagonist, we'll just call David Sedaris in this case, is going to pick apples in an orchard for no particular reason that we can understand, but he's tired of his life as it stands now and wants to do something entirely different. And we have a little bit of clip from just a little scene on the bus ride. Would you mind if we played that? It's audio.
No, absolutely.
Audio, of course, and give some idea of the bus ride.
Hey.
Yeah.
You think you're gonna learn something from that book?
Trying to.
I'll tell you something. You really want to learn the truth? There's only one place to do it. The Chatham Correctional Institute. It's the best school in this entire country. It taught me everything I know.
I bet it did.
Hell, you could fill a racetrack with every piece of ever written, but you would still learn more right here in this seat talking to me. I'm talking about the Lord. Have you opened your heart up to Jesus?
Look, I'm going to spare you the effort. I think that religion is meant for people who aren't smart enough to understand how the world really works and are so scared of being small and insignificant that they need someone to tell them how special and important they really are. Also, never having personally seen a racetrack full of books, I'll take my chances.
Oh, look.
You can go take your imaginary ghost somewhere else.
The Bible says.
I know what the Bible says.
Well, then what's your problem with it?
It's poorly written.
Poorly written. The bus ride is magic. Everything that happens in that bus ride is magic, I think.
We shot even a little bit more than what was in the film. It's like, mm-hmm. These series of, I thought it would be interesting to like start the film with almost a short film in and of itself. You know, mm-hmm. the title doesn't come up till after the bus ride, and this idea that it was in the short story, and I thought, okay, this will work. Like, this just quick series of interactions, and it's sort of the part of the movie that's the most Sedaris-like.
Right.
You know, you've kind of got these really wacky characters that come in and sort of throw these anecdotes at him that just seem too absurd to be true.
Right.
And it was a thrill. We had one day to shoot all of the stuff, and shooting on a moving bus isn't easy. But it turned out great.
Yeah, you didn't get him lying on the floor though, did you? Like in the essay.
Yeah, we did. At the very end, he's there on the floor. Yeah, the actor himself was perfectly content to put his face on the bottom of an actual dirty bus floor. Yeah. But we did get that.
But the problem here is now you couldn't do a voiceover, right? You weren't using voiceovers, and a lot of David Sedaris is what's running through his head, which is always funny and rather amazing thoughts. But how do you get that on the film then if you're not doing a voiceover, right? Is that the problem, basically?
I mean, that was the biggest challenge of making the film. I mean, I think the first thing, and I've read other script I've read some other material that's been, tried to be turned into film of his before, and it's always full of voiceover, and I think voiceover can be used really well in film, but for me, I wanted the movie to have my identity as a filmmaker as much as it had David's. I mean, I think that's something David was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought voiceover, I told him once, I said, the only reason I would put voiceover in this film, the story doesn't ask for it. So the only reason I'd be putting voiceover in here would be to steal your jokes, basically. And so for me, it was, the challenge was, how do you take that? How do you take what he writes and his internal thoughts, and how do you find ways to bring it on screen that doesn't feel forced? He doesn't keep a diary, he doesn't do anything like that, and it was definitely a deliberate effort to sort of avoid that traditional trope of adaptation, which is, hey, just give him a voiceover and then it's like you're reading the book,
But you do miss the lines, like when he's talking about the guy who says that he thinks Auschwitz is a brand of beer, so dumb he thinks Auschwitz is a brand of beer. That's kind of hard to convey.
There was a lot of like heartbreaking things to lose along the way, But at the end of the day, you have to make the movie. Even in the editing room, you lose a bunch of stuff that you love. I mean, it's the process of making a movie is the process of just, I think it is like it is editing a novel, or you've got to kind of be brutal and just focus on the character and the story.
Yeah. And you started. You were a gopher for Warren Beatty. Is that that?
Yeah. I first moved to LA, and through a series of somewhat incidental circumstances, ended up working for Warren for just a little over a year of my first year in Los Angeles.
Is that how you learned the directing ropes, or was that just irrelevant to what followed?
It was. I learned more. I think from him, I learned more about the business, how the business works, just by the nature of being around him. He wasn't making a film when I was working with him, so I didn't get any hands-on experience that way. I wish I had. I mean, he's one of my he's one of my heroes. So it would have been, it certainly would have been great to see him work that way. But unfortunately, over that year, I didn't get to see him that way. I learned by trial by fire on my first film.
Yeah. How does one do that? I know there are a lot of probably young filmmakers out there, and you know, so I can go to Hollywood. That's possible. That's doable. But when you're out, I mean, it's all about who you know and how and who you get to talk to and who will let you even take a pitch for something, right? I mean, is that how hard is that?
I mean, you know, there's so many different paths. I mean, that's the truth. I mean, if there's anything I've learned, that there isn't one sort of right answer. I mean, I made both of my films completely independently. So no, on the fringe of being in the industry. You know, it's not until they're finished that it really, you know, gets involved with distributors or you know, formal executive producers and such. So for me, it's always been the nature of just finding a story and then finding the money and finding a way to make it as cheaply as possible. You know, and I think that's the goal. It's, you know, I think I learned that, you know, part of my first couple years in L.A., it was sort of like, okay, well, I'm here. I'd graduated from film school, but I hadn't made a film, so I wasn't anywhere closer to being a filmmaker than the day I was born, just because I had moved to Los Angeles. So it really was just about what steps do I need to take to make a movie? And then at that point, okay, well, then you've made a movie, but you have to find a way to do that. And everyone has their different – some people do that in their own backyard, literally, and some people end up at a studio making their first film. But it just takes, you know – years and years and years of basically everyone telling you no, and you just keep on saying yes. Even with a David Sedaris story, I thought for sure, you know, we were going to make it cheaply, independently. I thought it would be easy in a lot of ways, and I was, of course, completely wrong. It took, you know, 3.5 years to get from the point I wrote the script to be able to get us on set making the film.
Yeah. 3.5 years for 8 weeks? Did you say you shot in 8 weeks?
Oh, no, I wish. We shot in 18 days.
Eight, 18 days.
Yeah, just a little over 3 weeks. We had such little, I mean, I couldn't even, I can't tell you, I wish I could, but we had such little money. I mean, way less than even, you know, a lot of movies out there, you know, get people talk about how low budget they were, like Beasts of the Southern Wild or something. They say, oh, it was made on a shoestring budget. I mean, we probably made our film for an eighth of what they did, if not less. So, I mean, it was, we had very little time and very little money, but at the end of the day, you know, you do what you have to do. And that was the 3-year process, was sort of the process of figuring out, okay, how do I keep the integrity of the film intact with the budget lower? And, you know, what changes, what compromises do you have to make? And when is compromising too much? You know, that's sort of always, for me, that's always the challenge when you're making a film and when you're shooting on set, because you basically have like 18 days and every minute counts. And so it's just always some problem will be thrown your way, and you have to just decide which problems need to be dealt with then and there. And it's really just, directing is about delegation and talking to actors. I truly believe that.
Yeah. And talking to actors, do you actually direct them? I know there are different schools of thought about this, but do you just hire people who should know what to do, or do you have to tell them, all right, I want you to walk over here and make this gesture, and then approach this in such a fashion. For example, you know, with Jonathan Groff, right, was your lead in this. A lot of it was just his reaction, and because you sort of had to look for the lines going through his head.
Exactly.
You know, you're expecting those little Davis that Harris things are passing through his head. So a lot of it was like reaction shots. And was that your direction, or is that something he brought to it, or how do you do that?
I mean, you know, a lot of it's casting. I really believe that. And it's something, like, as a director, I fight for through and through, is, like, the power to control how to cast the film and cast it the right way. So for me, it was finding someone. You know, he had done this play here in L.A. called Red with Alfred Molina, and there were so many traits that I was looking for that he had innately and was capable of performing. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's casting. You know, it's about finding the right person and trusting them to do the work, but also making sure you're not leaving them flat. I mean, you know, ultimately, my job is to make sure that the work they're doing matches the work that was being done the day before and the work that's happening behind the camera. So, you know, I do believe in sort of that middle ground. You know, you hear those directors that never talk to the actors once, and then you hear of those directors that rehearse for months ahead. I'm a little bit more towards the first camp, you know, didn't do much rehearsals, didn't have the time or money to, but kind of also believe in the power of just trusting the actor with the role and giving them the part, but at the same time making sure you're their safety net. You know, you're there to sort of say, hey, you took it a little too far, or you've got to take it further.
Yeah. And how nice to see Dean Stockwell again.
You know, Dean, I mean, it's just like, I think, you know, I'm a little bit younger than him, you know, and I think he thought I wouldn't have a familiarity when he came to set with his work. And it was sort of after the first day that I probably spent the entire day, like, praising effusively of his movies and his history, that he realized that I was sort of overly familiar with all the work he's done over, you know. But, I mean, his first role, Dean Stockwell's first role was when he was 6 years old. He's the little boy in Anchors Away with Gene Kelly. It's like, it's surreal. I don't know if there's any actor that's just had as you know, at least of his generation, that's had as varied and consistent and kind of, you know, underappreciated career as his.
Yeah. He was the orchard owner in this, where he went out to do the... Is it ever actually explained why he feels the need to go out and pick apples in an orchard? I mean, I read the essay and I've seen the movie, and I still don't quite get his train of thought.
For me, both movies I've made have, like, sort of male 20s-ish protagonists, yeah, who constantly put themselves into really terrible situations, you know. And I think that there's a certain aspect of David that Sedaris, who just sort of seeks out experience, you know. And I thought, well, that'll be interesting if there was a character who sort of just recklessly was looking for some kind of escape, yet in his mind it would be this completely, for lack of a better phrase, fruitless attempt, you know, this idea that, oh, apple picking would have some kind of Americana idealism to it. And I thought the irony of that would play really well on screen.
Yeah. And I get in the essay, I think there he had a friend who says, we got to go out and pick apples in the orchard because that's what America, who read Grapes of Wrath or something. So
yeah,
that's where we have to be, out in the fields picking.
Yeah, that, exactly. This idea that someone would read, and that's why I made sure that ended up in the film, yeah, this idea that someone would read Grapes of Wrath of all books and think, well, that's what we should be doing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I always found that so funny in the story. And, you know, tried to sort of get that across with his friend. You know, that was where, you know, when you go through adaptation, you got to make a lot of changes. And his friend was where I made some of the heavy amount of changes, by actually sort of bringing her into the situation and having her be the catalyst that, you know, for me, it was just about this, like, you can, you know, it's like whenever you're with friends and then they come up with an idea for a vacation or somewhere to go. And at first you kind of go along with it, even though you know it's going to be sort of a bad idea, but you sort of trick yourself into thinking it's going to be something great. And that was sort of what I was interested here, that he's sort of lying to himself, and then at that point he's so far down deep the rabbit hole of trying to prove people right that he stays out there. You know, that's what I kept on asking David, like, how come you didn't just go home? How come you didn't go home? And he was like, well, I didn't want to prove everyone that I told I was going out there right by coming back. You know, it was an issue of pride for him.
On the whole religion thing and accepting Christ, you went further in the movie than he did in the essay. Because in the essay, I don't recall that he actually went to the church and accepted Jesus and all that. It was more or less to get out of a very terrible situation when he was being attacked, and said, "You can't attack me. I'm a Christian.
Yeah,
yeah. I believe in Jesus." And so the guy backed off.
Well, yeah, and I think for me it was, I mean, one of the reasons I love the story, and I think it sticks out from his work, mm-hmm, is it has a certain amount. If you go back and read it, it's really different than his work now. It's longer. It's a lot less, for, you know, less funny, quote unquote. You know, there's not as many punchlines in it. And it was the religious aspects to me that sort of drew me to it. I thought he was presenting, mm-hmm, himself converting in this really sort of interesting way. And I thought, well, if on screen we don't really know, yeah, he uses it to get out of a situation, then what if there's some truth to it to him? You know, I kind of, the whole movie was structured off this idea that, like, you lose your body and your mind, and you're left with your soul. So even though he starts off, as you guys all heard in the clip, as sort of this very snarky sort of atheist point of view, I thought it would be really interesting to see that and have it be turned on its head. And that's coming from me. I'm not a Christian myself. I just thought it would be really interesting to show a character who ultimately thought he didn't need faith and in the end actually does need it and needs that comfort and that security.
Well, it's a great movie. You did a great job. It's COG, based on the David Sedaris essay, Kyle Patrick Alvarez. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Great talking with you.
Wonderful talking to you. Thank you.
COG.